It was a tough one last night for the Nets. We break down the harrowing overtime loss to the Minnesota Timberwolves. What went wrong? And if any, please, reinforcements are on the horizon for this struggling Nets team coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me, Marcus Barahal. And we are talking today about a pretty devastating Nets loss against the Timberwolves last night. I've been battling a cold for the last few days. And watching that game last night certainly did not help me in my recovery, much like any of the Nets players that are injured right now.
Yeah, that was not a good game. I'm not actually sick, but this game made me feel a little sick by the end, Josh.
Yeah, exactly. You're a little queasy. You're a little queasy, I'm sure.
I'm nauseous.
And that was it was rough to watch. I really, like, after all that, I don't even think I want to talk about the game as much. How are you, first of all?
I'm good. Not sick at all, I'll say. I think the people do want us to talk about the game a little bit. Yeah, this was disappointing. The year, ironically, 2020, I mean, comes to a close the same way that the 2019-20 season began, with an overtime loss to the Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm. It really puts a nice bow on 2019. And I have no data to back this up whatsoever, but I feel like the Nets always play terribly around the holidays. I think usually because it used to in years kind of, I'd say maybe 2016 and earlier, coincide with a huge West Coast swing. I think they would play San Antonio, and I know that's kind of more Southwest, but whatever. They would play San Antonio December like 30th through January 1st, at least like one time, basically every year, and get slaughtered there by like 30 points. So I feel like those, I just associate the holidays, not with time spent with loved ones and friends, but much more so with the Nets always having a very tough road trip.
Yeah, I mean, this game was not that. This was at home.
No, it was in Minnesota.
You're right. Oh,
yeah, because there was no one there, and they were playing. They were howling every time the Nets were at the free throw line.
That's right. Yeah, and the game ended with I think Robert Covington shooting free throws to MVP chance. So that should tell you,
of course, where
the Minnesota Timberwolves are, because they didn't have anybody either. Like, the Nets have all these injuries, but Minnesota, not like they were at full strength either. So they were like truly no excuses in this game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they didn't have. Obviously, Karl-Anthony Towns has been sitting out the last few games, and there was thought that he could have come back last night, but he didn't. Wiggins had the flu. I think Travion Graham did as well. Lehman's been out forever. Vonleh was a late scratch. So they were really bare bones. I mean, half these guys are people that are getting kind of their first serious look in the league. Keelan Martin, I think, was undrafted this year. Kata Bates-Diop was someone that didn't get much run last year as a first-round pick. Naz Reid, of course, like, Culver's a guy that struggled. Napier's bounced around. I mean, this is a terrible roster. Like, I get that the Nets right now, when you look at their roster, many could say the same thing besides the Spencer Dinwiddie type because of how many injuries they have. But they should be able to beat this Minnesota team. It's pathetic what happened.
Yeah.
So kind of looking into the game, I mean, there was no one really besides Joe Harris, who I thought had a quietly excellent game with 19 points on 8 of 14 shooting. And we'll get into Chandler and TLC a little bit. But they blew so many easy opportunities. I mean, Dinwiddie had at least five or six very easy layups that he normally converts that he just flubbed both in the first quarter and then one in overtime as well. Torian Prince was absolutely awful. 3 of 13 from the field, 3 turnovers. His shot selection was terrible. He was just chucking shots up with reckless abandon. Temple, I thought he was getting good looks, but he just can't buy a bucket right now. I mean, there was no flow on offense. Everything... Kenny Atkinson should just burn the tape from this game because it was really, really disgusting.
Yeah, and we saw the return of something that was like really tough to watch at the beginning of the year, which was like the failed lob pass. Dinwiddie threw one to DeAndre, I think, in like a key stretch in the final minute.
Yes,
and
yes!
He had no business throwing it. He had so many plays where it seemed like he came off the pick and he was looking for that lob where... a little floater, like he had that open to him and he just wasn't really taking it.
Yeah, well, his floater is terrible. He took two in the game, missed it. He took one the possession before the lob was thrown. I don't know if it was supposed to be a lob. I think he just airballed the floater. I mean, I tweeted this from the Locked On Nets account. Follow us there on Twitter, of course. But he needs that shot, and he is so reluctant to take it. And when he does, it looks horrible. Because remember, the Nets had a 5-point lead with about a minute left in this game. And the whole momentum changed when, I forget who it was, airballed the three. It looks like it's sailing out of bounds easily. Georgie Jang makes a terrific hustle play, sprinting into the stands to back tap it out past DeAndre Jordan and Torian Prince, who are looking like completely clueless. And Jang's energy really changed the game before he fouled out. The Timberwolves get the ball there, get the free throw, cut the lead to three. Next possession, Dinwiddie airballs the floater. Timberwolves score again. Next possession, Dinwiddie throws the lob up to no one in particular, and Jang hits the go-ahead three, and now they're up by two, and the Nets are lucky to tie it up in regulation.
Yeah, the last minute and a half of this game was insane. Culver missed that three, and then Jang had, like, what was maybe the best, like, out-of-bounds save that I've, like, ever seen. He ran really far. And credit to Culver, too, for cutting off ball to get to that when none of the Nets really, like, made any sort of effort to block him out or block anyone out. I think probably because they just assumed that there was no way Jang could get to it. But still, like, it's a tough look to just kind of be standing there flat-footed.
Terrible.
Yeah, and that completely swung the momentum, like you said. Jang had such a good game. I thought that the Nets would maybe have, like, a slight chance when he fouled out towards the end of overtime, but it was too little too late. And then in addition to like that crazy play, there was also the thing at the end with the timeout and then on the ensuing inbound, like the
Jordan Bell go
to. Yeah, going through the basket.
Yeah, what do you think of those plays? What do you think of, did the refs make the right call on either of them?
I thought that the timeout, they made like a double wrong call because I didn't think Joe Harris had possession long enough for the Nets to call timeout. Like he looked like he had two hands on the ball at one point, but it was for literally probably like a tenth of a second, and I don't think you can really call a timeout in that amount of time. I think the right call would have been to just let the clock run out. But then once they did give the Nets the timeout, I was surprised that they didn't put more time back on the clock. And I know it's just like a couple tenths of a second, but when you're down to that like low of an amount of time on the clock, that's when it really matters, because I think 0.3 is the lowest you can have where you can do a catch and shoot. It wound up being 0.2, which is the whole reason that they had to throw that lob, because then you can only do a tip in. So even if they had put in like 2/10 of a second more, like that's a huge difference. It completely changes what kind of play Kenny could draw up. So the fact that they called the timeout was strange, and then the fact that they didn't add any more time, because when Harris had the possession for the brief amount of time that he did, it looked like it was with 1.4 on the clock, and then I figure maybe like with a little bit of like delay, that kind of thing, like human accounting for like a gap between the like reaction of people, you can maybe put it at like 0.8 or something like that, like take another half second from there. But they left it at 0.2, and then that led to the inbounds pass, which Joe Harris threw a pretty good pass. It was like right on the rim. That's kind of what you have to do. And I was confused by the no call there. I know they explained it in the broadcast saying that because it was on a pass, it was like not a live ball. But I feel like if that happens on an alley-oop, like in play, I feel like it's a different call. What did you think of that?
Yeah, no. So I think with the... Yeah, like with the inbounds play, I'm happy they didn't call it because I think that's such a cheap way to end the game. But Jordan Bell did go through the rim, and I don't think you're allowed to do that. And I get it, yes, because like the thing is about disrupting a shot, and you can't shoot from out of bounds. But like, was it on the rim exactly, or was it right in front of the rim? It was hard for me to exactly tell where Joe Harris put the ball.
Yeah, it looked like the pass like hit off the front of the rim while Bell's hands were through it, and DJ's hands maybe came up and tipped the ball after that. But I feel like if, like, based on this interpretation of the ruling, like, you could, like, if you had someone tall enough, I guess, theoretically, you could stand with your hands, like, through the basket the whole time, like, up until a shot is going up, which seems wrong. I feel like that shouldn't be allowed to happen.
No, that definitely, like, I think there needs to be something done with that rule. But it was a lot of confusion. Well, I need to, like, rewatch the play last year. Do you remember the Suns did some out of bounds play similarly when they only had 0.2 seconds left
to Chandler?
To Chandler. I need to look exactly what the Chandler play was.
Yeah, that one, they, I think they had a little bit more time than the Nets did, because Chandler, I'm pretty sure, like, caught it and threw it down. But yeah, because there's, I think there's also no, like, basket interference offensively on an inbound pass. It's like,
right.
It's sort of like how in soccer, I think there's no offsides on a throw-in. Like, it's a little strange, but I think
so. If there's no offensive basket interference, should there be a should there be any defensive basket interference?
Right. I guess not. I mean, it does kind of sort of make sense, but it's just, it's a weird, like, quirky rule.
Yeah, I think we definitely need Kokoschkov back, because that was really his crowning achievement this year.
For sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know what else he would be known for in the NBA.
Exactly. And on the timeout thing, like, the Nets definitely should not have been granted that. There was absolutely, like, Joe Harris had the ball maybe for a split second, but definitely did not have control, because it was taken away so quickly. I think it's the type of thing where the refs say, hey, we messed up giving him the ball. Let's just not give full time back on the clock. So it was kind of a middle ground for the Wolves when they kind of screwed them. But that, yeah, I mean, the whole kind of last sequence there was completely botched. But it doesn't take away from the fact that the Nets completely blew this game. And then in overtime, they really just didn't have a chance, because the Wolves were just gunning up everything and just hitting these crazy shots. And that's what happens when you let a team hang around for 48 minutes. They don't get hot at all, really. You finally give them an opportunity, they have confidence, and then they just hit everything. So really, once it got to overtime, the Nets had no shot. Robert Covington was hitting insane shots. Napier was doing whatever he wanted. Keelan Martin, of course. It was really just a disaster all around.
Yeah, Napier had, like, a full revenge overtime, it seemed like. He was making everything. That step back he hit, that was, like, kind of the dagger, was... it was tough over Chandler, the cardio king in overtime. Looks like he ran out of steam a little bit. And I saw a great tweet from our guy Jared Dudley, who was, like, basically saying Napier had this game circled on his calendar. easy to say that after the fact, I think.
Nah, I mean, I get it. It's also like he had as much time to shoot as he wanted, or much plays to shoot as he wanted, because basically there was no one else that was going to be demanding the ball from him. I mean... After Teague, I mean, I know he went down super awkwardly with that hyperextended knee in the end of the first half. I think he came back for the second half, but obviously definitely wasn't himself, because he only played 20 minutes, and he was probably – him and Robert Covington were the best players available to Ryan Saunders last night.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Nets, like, not having any shot creators outside of Dinwiddie. Like, this Timberwolves team, it was literally, like, Napier, Zhang – pick and pop, pick and roll at the top of the key every time, which is, like, to lose to that, like, really should show how much the Nets have struggled recently. And I know that the offense has been, like, not good the last couple of games. They hadn't scored over 100 in a couple of games, so they at least did that in this game. It took overtime against one of the worst teams I've seen this year, and yet they still lost. So not an encouraging sign going into 2020. The team is back to 500. I think bigger picture, this is not a good look. They need Caris LeVert to come back soon. It seems like he's closer than Kyrie, but still the updates are, like, kind of few and far between. I think, like, other than him coming back, is there, like, any sign of hope really for the Nets right now?
You know, Marcus, I'm just so mad. And we're gonna take a quick break, but first I want to tell you guys about one of my favorite sponsors, Calm. We talk about physical fitness a lot on the podcast, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. Both LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, have less stress, and perform at your best. For LeBron, it's such an important part of his mental fitness routine. If you head to calm.com/lockedonNBA, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to the nature scene LeBron loves, like Rain on Leaves, and so much more, like sleep stories and meditation. So unlock this content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. After watching the Nets last night, I think we all need it. Get started at com.com/lockedonNBA. That's com.com/lockedonNBA. And using our promo code gets you a 40% discount to an annual membership. It sounds pretty good to me. So, Marcus, on the injury front, there definitely needs to be reinforcements. Kyrie, I think it's going to probably be another 2 or 3 weeks at the minimum. Who knows with the Nets? But there's no real updates on him. Karis, I mean, we have Kenny basically saying before every game as he rolls him out that he's getting super close. So I don't really care if he's getting close. I just want him playing. But now I'm just so sick of this Nets crypticism anytime there's an injury. Basically, from what I'm reading between the tea leaves, there's a big practice that they're holding on New Year's Day. If LeVert gets through that without kind of scot-free, he will be playing against the Mavericks on Thursday. The Nets desperately need him back. I mean, the bench actually kind of played okay when you think about it because Chandler was hitting shots and TLC was draining threes. But like, there's just no flow on the bench, and they need someone that can create open looks. So we'll see if LeVert can do that because the Nets desperately need him back and being able to have the ball in his hands, and maybe he can unlock some things that he struggled with at the start of the season. But even if he plays at his level at the start of the season, it's still a monumental upgrade for this Nets team, especially with the way that guys like Temple and Torian Prince are shooting the ball.
Yeah, for sure. And like you mentioned, they've got 2 days off here before that Dallas game. The fact that he even like came on this three-game road trip, to me at least, implied that he was going to come back at some point during it, and now this is the last game of it coming up. So I'm hopeful that he'll play in this Maverick game. And then you mentioned Chandler and TLC. I feel like we should at least like shout them out, TLC especially. I thought that he played really well. Obviously, he made those three threes, but also I just felt like his energy was there. He was grabbing a lot of rebounds. It's good to see him step up a little bit. Like losing Nwaba was tough. So seeing someone at least bring that same energy and knock down some shots in this game was nice to see. It didn't lead to anything. But when he did make those like three threes in a row, the Nets led 89-80. I thought that they had completely seized momentum. I thought that the game was over. Chandler had some nice shots in this game as well. But the Nets could never really get over the hump. I think their biggest lead was 9. It seemed like they were up by a couple points pretty much the whole game. Minnesota didn't lead until the third quarter, so just couldn't really get like that one more shot to push them out of reach in this one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think with TLC, like, it's great to see him knocking down shots. I think 7 of 12 from 3 in these last three games. So that's obviously been a huge boon. I still don't necessarily trust his jump shot a ton. I don't think like his track record either in the NBA or G League really shows that he was bound to have a huge improvement, but who knows? Maybe he can definitely prove me wrong and be more consistent. The first two he hit were definitely like wide open catch and shoots, and the third one was off a nice screen. So good to see him have some versatility in his jump shot there. And I also want to shout out Kirks because he only played 12 minutes in this game but 4 assists, and I think his ability to cut has meshed very well with DeAndre Jordan. And on TLC's first two threes, one was when Kirk's cut to the rim, received a pass from DJ. It was kind of crowded. Rhodey gained control of it and kicked it out in the corner, but it was a nice pass by him. And the other one, he ball faked, drove to the rim, and then kicked it out to TLC. So both good plays. And I think his ability to cut can create a lot of open opportunities for the rest of the Nets when they're in such dire straits. I'm excited to see what he could do with more of a playmaker alongside him, whether it be Spencer or Karis, because right now he's kind of matched up with Temple in those units. But I think, you know, the guy makes things happen, and I think that if he's ever going to be put in the role as a scorer, he's going to be completely miscast. But I do think he's kind of a nice Swiss Army knife to have, who can make things happen on defense, on the glass, get to the rim. He had that nice alley feed from Dinwiddie this game, where he got that open dunk. So like, he can do really good things on the court. It's just putting him in those positions to succeed, because he's not kind of someone that you throw out there with any lineup and it's going to be successful.
Yeah, it's kind of what you would want Prince to be doing, although Prince had 0 assists in 35 minutes and took 13 shots. So I don't know. Obviously, Rhodey started some last year and played like a bigger role. I think Prince, they probably have too much invested in him to move him to the bench, but I think maybe getting their minutes closer together could be beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, I think Prince is going to be one of the most interesting players to see when guys start coming back, because how is he going to fit into more of a role? Because the only thing this guy does is shoot. Like, he has no ability to, like, he was turning it over constantly last night, just, like, unnecessary passes. He has no handle. He has this obsession with going one-on-one, and he has no moves whatsoever. I can't believe he got that lucky and hit the shot to tie it up in regulation and send it to overtime. He's just a gunner. I mean, I think I do see his defensive intensity pick up when he's hitting shots. I think it's a direct correlation there, but he's just so streaky, and like, his basketball IQ is shockingly low on a Nets team that's usually filled with guys, like last year especially, their wings like DMC and Jared Dudley, who are really high IQ players.
Yeah, Brad Rowland tried to warn us, Josh. Yeah.
I know. We should have listened to Brad. Yeah, I should have warned Marks after the podcast. Been like, no, Brad said we need to reverse the trade.
It seemed like from the beginning of like when this trade happened, it seemed like too good to be true. And like, I know for me personally, like I had seen Prince a couple times. I had always like liked his game, but it could have just been one of those things where like you catch him on the right night, I guess. Because yeah, night in, night out, he's just like, he's like you said, he just shoots. That's pretty much it.
He just shoots.
That's literally all he does. He's a good rebounder. But yeah, okay. Like the Nets have a lot of like scrappy rebounders. That's not like,
yeah. Is he ever getting like any tough rebounds where it's like, wow, like the Nets needed that and Torian Prince came away with it? He's getting like a lot of cheap rebounds, I feel like.
Probably.
And I mean, want to discredit him, but still.
He is playing like basically at the four position in pretty much every lineup. So like if the big, like if Jared Allen or DJ is like boxing out the center, he's kind of the biggest guy left to get the rebound. So there probably are a lot of those. He doesn't get like those Joe Harris rebounds, who Joe had like a huge rebound in this game that I just remembered, where it was like, I think off a DJ missed free throw with like two-ish minutes left. He grabbed it with one hand, kicked it back out, got another possession. He's always great, just to praise him for a second.
Yeah, no, he, like, that's someone who is like, listen, the stats don't back up and getting a ton of rebounds, but like, I can remember Joe Harris getting in there, scrapping and getting some rebounds.
He's
and
an eye test guy.
He is an eye test guy. Prince is a nothing guy, basically. other miscellaneous items. this is going to be a recurring theme. If anyone didn't listen to the Nets Knicks crossover podcast, I don't blame you, because Gavin was interesting, to say the least. We are unveiling a new segment called Miscellaneous, where we talk about some miscellaneous highlights from the Knights, and maybe they'll be Jean and Musa related sometimes. But thought Wilson Chandler looked good, as people said. 13 points, 5 of 9 shooting. Gave them some nice pop off the bench. Had one play where he drove from the three-point line. Kind of just stuck his shoulder into someone and got the open finger roll. And I think that's what they need out of him. Just to be able to create something from nothing. He's not going to be an important player that much once Kyrie and LeVert return. But I think given what this Nets team is right now and on this three-game losing streak, he's certainly an important part of what they're doing. I think other thing I wanted to highlight was Naz Reid's like pure set shot. That cracked me up every time. Very Brooke Lopez-like. And he took 10 threes in 20 minutes. He was gunning them up.
Yeah, 16 total shots, too. I liked his game in college.
He was really good at LSU. I liked him a lot.
Yeah, and he led Minnesota in scoring in the first half in this game. I think he had 11 of his 13 in the first half. Yeah, he's an interesting case. They have a lot of like random guys on Minnesota, like KBD, him, Jordan Bell. Like I felt like Okogie could have played more. I've always liked him.
I thought they liked him a lot last year. I'm not sure why he's like kind of buried on the bench. He was like the ninth man.
Yeah, not sure. Maybe it's a Rhodey situation where he's just not playing as well this year. But
yeah, that's fair. Yeah. And then also, like, I mean, the Timberwolves, I'm shocked they only had 14 turnovers, because they looked like the, at times they were looking like the Nets of like 2015 and 2016. Just like the turnovers they had were laughable. There was one play where Teague had the ball and someone on Minnesota went to check in. And as he was walking the scorer's table, I guess Teague thought that he was like in the game and just threw in the ball. Like, I think teams should like, I can see why that's super distracting. I would only send guys to the scorer's table when they were on the other end of the court. But they had some insanely bad turnovers. Shocking it's only 14. I think a lot of that goes to show that the Nets don't have a ton of like menaces out there that are going to create that defensive ball pressure. Because for a team with limited ball handlers and playmakers, the Nets should have really been able to get out and transition more and force them into a lot more turnovers.
Yeah, that's a good point. This game was like not good basketball for most
yes,
of it.
Yes. We both agree on that. It was pretty bad. But at least the Nets have a chance to redeem themselves. In Dallas, it will be against a Mavericks team that I think Luka's been in and out of the lineup the last couple of games. He should be back because I think he did return for the second half of that Lakers game. But
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how they guard him. I'm assuming it will be a lot of Temple and some Torian Prince as well. Obviously, with KP out there, he has a huge size advantage on a lot of the Nets guys, and they'll usually throw him out there with someone like a Powell or Maxi Kleba, so it'll be even more difficult for the Nets to kind of contain their size. But they certainly need LeVert back. They just need anyone out there who can play make and take the load off of Dinwiddie's shoulders, who, even though he didn't have his best game tonight, was still able to get to the line 13 times and with 31 shots, just an insane amount of usage, and he definitely needs his load eased a bit if possible. So we'll see what they can do there. Of course, subscribe to the podcast on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, we will be there. Rate us, review us, follow us on Twitter at Locked On Nets. I am at @JMBass_. Marcus is at @MarcusBearHall. I will try to rest up and get over my cold with our friends at Calm. And until next time, be well.
Bye.